right, welcome to Eastern Sierra Now's Extra Butter, Please. This is a little bit different type of movie review podcast because when we start, we haven't seen the movie. And by the time we finish, we've seen it. That way you can get sort of a perspective of somebody who doesn't know versus just someone telling you what to think about the movie because they're always wrong. Today, I'm here with my guest, Amy Smith. Amy?
Good morning, Jesse. Thank you for having me. Although I don't know why you're having me here because I don't know a lot about movies.
I bet you know the one thing that is most important about today's movie. Who are you going to call?
Ghostbusters.
Nailed it. That's all you needed to know.
All right, then I'm ready.
So we are going to see Ghostbusters Afterlife here in just a couple of hours. But in the meantime, I figured we needed to talk about what's most important. And that's Ghostbusters number one from 1984.
Absolutely.
Ghostbusters is one of the most iconic films of all time. It was made for about $25 million, and it made, any idea?
More than $25
million. Yes, it did. $295 million, which with today's Marvel standards is nothing. But for 1984, it was, in fact, the highest grossing comedy of all time. And the second highest grossing film of the year.
I had no idea. Mm-hmm.
Yep, it's since changed, but at the time, it was huge. It was also the first comedy to ever use high-end special effects.
Oh, wow. Oh, and I remember the ghost in the library.
It was great.
I was just a little kid, and I remember that ghost, and it was one of the most terrifying things that I had seen at that point in my life.
Oh, yeah, they terrified that. The library, she's like all nice. That's great.
That still gives me nightmares.
And in that scene, we were also introduced to the iconic ghost of Ghostbuster, Slimer.
Slimer. Oh, I love Slimer.
Yeah. Another really interesting fact about that was the original movie was written by Dan Aykroyd in the original script and his love of paranormal. And his family actually is in spiritualism and seances and that kind of stuff. That's where he learned about all this stuff.
Oh, no wonder it makes such sense then if you watch it.
So his original idea was for him and Jim Belushi to be ghost-busting time travelers that travel between different dimensions fighting ghosts. But it cost too much money. And as they were trying to get the script ready to go and knocked down to where they could actually pay for it, Jim Belushi overdosed and died. So with Slimer, because they wanted Jim Belushi to be in the movie, they designed the ghost Slimer after Jim Belushi. Oh. So if you look at his facial features, he looks like Jim Belushi.
Oh, and I love Jim Belushi, so that's probably why I have such a special spot in my heart for Slimer.
Oh, and he's the best. The other thing that, too, most people and Slimer has some cool scenes in the movie.
He does.
But most people love Slimer just like you'd love Scooby-Doo or something. But the weird thing is, in the movie, he doesn't have much of a storyline. There's not much to him. It's just a cool ghost that you see.
Yep.
The reason we love Slimer is because of the real Ghostbusters cartoon that came on in the mid-80s, where he was a main character.
And this was after the movie? And probably
about 1985.
Being so young in 1985, I've probably mushed all of those ideas together.
Yep, that's what's happened, is because we've all had these things over the years, just like Star Wars. If I was to say, Yoda, you're going to go, oh, I loved Star Wars A New Hope. Well, Yoda wasn't in Star Wars A New Hope, you know what I mean? But because all these things are pushed together with such an iconic franchise as Ghostbusters, you think of Slimer as this integral part of the team, but he's not. He's a bad guy in all sense.
He's trying to capture him.
He's a troublemaker. I'm really hoping that Slimer gets more in this one because of that.
Well, and that was one of the things I just lit up when I saw the previews for this movie and I saw Slimer flying along. That's so nostalgic for me.
It's so cool.
I cannot wait to see him.
Yeah, it should be fantastic.
Okay, so I'm curious to know, because I haven't looked too much into the movie that we're going to see today, but are we going to see Bill Murray?
So now that it's been out for a couple of days, I unfortunately do know for a fact that Ernie Hudson, who plays Winston, and Dan Aykroyd and Bill Murray are in the movie. They were trying to keep that a secret. But because we didn't go opening night, now it's out there.
It's out. Okay.
And I try really hard not to look at things until I see the movie myself. But it's, you know, that's huge news. I mean, it's
huge.
Bill Murray. He's the best there is.
He is the best.
Yeah.
Unmatched.
Yeah, no question.
Comedian. I absolutely love him. One of my favorites.
It's pure chaos. Dogs and cats living together. Apocalypse. Mass hysteria. So a lot of the lines in this script were improvised by Bill Murray. A lot of his lines.
The new one too?
I don't know. We'll see about that. Yeah, we'll see. I would imagine one thing that's really cool about the new one that I read too is that the original director, Ivan Reitman, was who directed number one and number two, which number two wasn't as good as number one, but it's still, it's part of canon, as they call it. Ivan Reitman passed the torch on to his son, Jason Reitman, who directed Afterlife, which we're going to see.
Oh, that's wonderful.
In a sense, it's going to sort of have the same feel. It's going to be the same because it's the dad passing it on. So I'm imagining he's going to give the same free rein to someone like Bill Murray.
Now,
Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd's just as great, and he's the lead in this.
So
I'm imagining most of his lines are improv, just like Ant-Man. I mean, most of that was improv.
Oh, he's such a funny guy.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be fantastic to see him alongside Bill Murray. And here's a question for you. So between then and now, there was another Ghostbusters that came out, and I intentionally...
We don't speak of that
one. I know, I didn't see it, and I don't know anything about it. So this is really in no relation to these.
No, you don't need to see that. That was, that was woke Hollywood trying to... prove that, you know, women are better than men. And that's pretty much what that was about.
Well, they are, but the Ghostbusters are the Ghostbusters.
Fair enough.
You can't replace them with women.
Fair enough. I'll give you that one. And see, the thing is, I absolutely adore all of the women that are in that movie.
Yes.
Kristen Wiig is like my favorite. They're all fantastic. Melissa McCarthy. Every one of those actresses is brilliant. The movie itself was pure ass. And it's because instead of trying to make a good movie.
But don't hold back. I mean, tell me
what do you really think?
Yeah, what do you really feel about this?
It was... I mean, it was taking the same concept, using exactly the same plot lines, the same story, the same characters, but just making them women instead because women are better. And that was the point. And that's where I'm wrong with that. Because I'm not going to say I'm a feminist because that's stupid for me to say that because clearly I'm a guy. But what I think is there's balance. Women and men are just as funny. They're just as talented.
Yes.
They could play the parts together, but you shouldn't give a man's part that's already been iconic to a woman just to say, oh, well, women could do it too. Make new parts.
That's how I agree with you.
Make new movies and let women be that. Or in the opposite, take a woman's movie and let men be that in the opposite end. That's I'm 100% for balance and fairness.
Yes.
I don't that's where the other Ghostbusters, the woman one failed, was and by no means am I knocking women when I say this. I'm saying the movie itself was terrible. Like the only thing that I thought was even funny, and it was just playing on Janine, who is the secretary, Ghostbusters. What do you want?
Well, and Janine has to be Janine.
She's in this. But the problem with Janine in the girl Ghostbusters movie is it was played by Chris Hemsworth, Thor, who is my favorite, and he's hilarious. And you would think that's great, but instead of just creating a character for him, you made him be the secretary. And the joke is how hot he is. So they're all like, "Oh my god, he's so hot all the time." And it's like, it's like, oh god, you know, you didn't see the original Ghostbusters pining over Janine.
So why
do you need these? Because they're women, they have to like the hot guy. That's what I didn't like. See what I mean?
It wasn't
balanced and true to women. It was, oh look, we put women in these roles. It was stupid. It was very stupid.
Well, so
and for women of that caliber and the actresses of that caliber, that was lame.
Oh, that is lame. That's too bad. So we'll just strike that from our memories.
Yeah, it's gone.
Okay.
Good. Just pretend that didn't happen.
And I'm glad I didn't see it. So it doesn't
This is a direct sequel to Ghostbusters number two.
Great.
Which Ghostbusters number two is the one in New York where they slimed the Statue of Liberty and then they had it walking around and getting the ghosts.
Then the music. Was it
Viggo the Carpathian? That was the remember the painting.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. What was the music that they played?
That one was "You Lift Me Up
Higher." Like that.
Yeah.
I remember singing that.
Yep. Well, that's what they learned from the first one was how important music was. The original score, like every movie, was written by, let me see, I have his name here. I don't recall what it was. Elmer Bernstein was the guy's name, and he did the entire score for the movie. And as they were coming out with it, they decided they needed some popular music. So they cut the scene in the library and they put in a song. It was called Magic. I can't remember how that one goes, but I remember.
I can't find it in my head anywhere.
I'll be watching this again soon. But then instead of the theme that he wrote for the Ghostbusters, they decided, okay, you know what? We need to do a popular song. So they had, where's my number here? I just wrote this down. Where'd it go? 272, I believe, popular music artists write themes for the Ghostbusters, and they ended up choosing Ray Parker Jr.'s, who you're going to call Ghostbusters. Something strange in the neighborhood.
And you wrote that. That's
Yep. Another interesting fact about Ray Parker Jr. Mm-hmm. Lived in Mammoth for years and years and years.
Really?
Frequented the karaoke that happened at Shogun by Kenji Kawaguchi.
And did he sing that song?
He did.
Did he?
Yeah. Kenji, one of our actor buddies.
$1 million
He sang that with him before. Oh, that'd be amazing. That would be so much
fantastic.
Fun. Ray Parker Jr. Yep. And that became the number one top Billboard hit for, I think it was 7 weeks in a row, ten weeks in a row.
I remember. I mean, I was just a kid running around singing that song.
So, and it led to the popularity. Other than it was a great movie, it helped. That was one of the first movies where they did that, where you realized that, oh, having a theme that can then be on the Billboard chart, you're doubling your money and you're doubling your exposure by doing that. And that was one of the first. And it's still popular.
So many firsts in that movie.
Another really interesting thing. I'm full of trivia. I apologize. Maybe you'll find it interesting. Is that when they decided that they needed a theme song for that was going to be a popular one, just as a replacement, while they were editing it, they put in I Want a New Drug by Huey Lewis. I want a new drug.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's what they put in just to have it there. Yes. So they had a placeholder. Uh-huh. And then they told people try to write based something like this.
Uh-huh.
So if you put Ghostbusters and I Want a New Drug next to each other, they're almost the same song.
Oh, my goodness.
And that's why they chose it, because that was the one they were used to editing with. Uh-huh. And I think there was actually some copyright issues with that, where they said Huey Lewis sued them or something, because that's my song.
Well, and see, I love your movie trivia, because then I go into the movie and I watch it in a completely different way.
Yeah. And something like Ghostbusters has been around for so long, you've got a billion and a half different trivias.
Yes.
You know, there's a lot of stuff in there that ties together that you don't realize, especially when you're a kid watching it.
Well,
like, for instance, the Stay Puft Marshmallow Man.
Yes.
The reason that comes up is because earlier in the refrigerator, remember when he opens the fridge and there's just eggs and stuff, and then he shuts it, but he opens it and there's a dimension going to Zool and all that?
Yes.
There are Stay Puft Marshmallows right there.
Oh, I didn't see it.
So they actually tie that in throughout the whole thing. And so there's a lot of that ties into different stuff. The other one that I really want to touch on, and I hope happens tonight, is Rick Moranis. I don't see how or why he would be in it, because it wouldn't make sense, because he was integral to the plot of the first one, but it wasn't like he was part of the team.
Yes, yes.
I hope there's some kind of callback or something would be great.
It would be so great to see.
Yeah, that was originally cast by John Candy, RIP, one of the best.
Oh.
And he didn't quite understand what he was trying to do with the role.
Uh-huh.
So he showed up with a German accent and two German Shepherd dogs, and that was going to be his character.
Uh-huh.
And Ivan Reitman's like, man, this isn't the part. This isn't it. And so then Jan Candy backed out. So he called his buddy, Rick Moranis, who they had been in Central City out of Chicago, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
They're both Canadian, but I think they were in Chicago doing stand-up there. Mm-hmm. It was either that or one in Chicago. Don't quote me. Okay. But I wouldn't.
Don't worry.
But don't worry. I won't.
So Rick Moranis came in,
and he only had like an hour to figure out his part and stuff, and so he showed up. He had his glasses, which are trademark for him.
Yes.
And he started doing, there's that long scene where he's talking about when he invites her to come to the party, and he's like, oh, and then the Hamiltons or whatever, they had their taxes done, and then I did that thing, whatever. It's all improv, 100%. He just went for it.
They kept
it in the movie.
He's so cute.
So good.
I want to see him again.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I hope Zool has something to do with this, because that's great.
Well, there's got to be some type of a Zool.
I did see that those hellhound dog things are in it, because it's in the trailer.
Oh, cool.
And those are Zool's pets, basically.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that it's Zool that comes back, and we'll see. So from what I understand and what I'm expecting from Afterlife, we'll just get into that for 2 minutes and then go see the movie.
All right.
Is what I understand from the commercial is that Egon, who was Harold Ramis, who passed away a few years ago, so he won't be in the movie, of course.
Yes.
His family, so he had kids, he had a daughter, and it makes me think that maybe Janine is the mom, but I don't think so, but maybe. But anyway, Harold Ramis leaves a house because they don't have anything out in the middle of, you know, Ohio or Kansas or something.
Mm-hmm.
And they go there and they find all of the Ghostbuster stuff there.
Mm-hmm.
And so the two kids, one of which was from Stranger Things, are the newbies to the town or whatever. And so they're not friends and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so they get into this, you know, it's typical. That's how movies go.
Yeah.
And Paul Rudd, I believe, probably is maybe their science teacher or something, based on the commercial.
Okay.
And we'll see what happens. But they get into hijinks there. And for some reason, Egon moved to this little place because this was like maybe like a, I don't know, a hell mouth or something, to use a Buffy the Vampire phrase. Like this is a place where hell can converge onto Earth.
Okay.
And I think that's what's happening here. And
that's a Stranger Things.
Yeah, it is kind of Stranger Things, but probably better because it's Ghostbusters.
Well, yeah. Everything's better with Ghostbusters.
Yeah, totally. So they got the same station wagon. They've got the... which is hearse, actually, and the traps and the ray guns and all that stuff. You know, the So anyway, I'm guessing it's going to be pretty great. I've heard people, like a friend of mine that I trust his opinion on movies. We'll get him on the show here soon. He went in saying, I have zero hopes for this. So that way I don't get disappointed.
Oh.
And then I saw his reply and he said it was magnificent. Oh, he loved every second of it. And so I'm super stoked.
Oh, good. I'm so excited.
It's great, so easy to mess up sequels. And so especially something as beloved as the Ghostbusters.
Well, and how many years later?
Yeah, yeah, totally. Exactly. Well, without further ado, let's go watch the movie and then we'll come back and tell you all about what we saw.
All right.
There might be spoilers in the second half. So if you don't want any spoilers, stop now, go watch the movie and then come back and listen to Eastern Sierra Now's Extra Butter, Please. We'll be right back. You looking for something strange that doesn't look good? Well, who are you going to call? Definitely not Brood Awakening, because everything at Brood Awakening is awesome. Tastes fantastic, over the top, so. Have you been to Brood Awakening? You need to go. It's in Big Pine, right there on Main Street. It's actually 120 South Main Street. Their hours, 5 a.m. to 1:30 p.m., Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Fridays, and Saturdays. They've got everything from croissants to cupcakes to omelets to enchiladas. Did I mention coffee? Oh man, you got to go try the dirty bean. That's what I get every time. I just love, oh man. Now I wish they were open right now. I'm recording this at night. You need to head down to Brood Awakening. Then you'll feel better about busting ghosts. Brood Awakening in Big Pine.
Okay, we saw it.
We have seen it.
Ghostbusters Afterlife. Amy, did you like it?
I loved it.
I loved it. Amy, would you see it again?
Yes.
I'd see it again too. Okay, thanks for tuning in, everybody. See you later.
Good evening.
I thought it was a great callback to the original. I mean, it felt the same. It had the same kind of effects. They even did... On purpose, they made, with access to humongous CGI special effects, they made it feel like the 80s special effects.
It had that 80s feel. Mm-hmm. It did. It, from the start, and I thought it was just great.
Right. Yeah. We'll try to not do spoilers for the first couple of minutes, and then we'll warn for spoilers, and then from there we can talk about things that happen.
Okay.
I think it had a lot of heart. I think the characters were done really well, especially the little girl.
Yes.
She was fantastic. The actress, her name was McKenna Grace, I believe. She was fantastic.
She was amazing.
Yeah, she was really good. And she totally played, you can't really give it, well, I guess it gives away in the trailer. She's the granddaughter of Egon Spengler, who is Harold Ramis' character in the original one.
Yes.
And in real life, he passed away, I think, 2 years ago. So, anyway, she did a great job of kind of mimicking him.
I thought she did, and she did mimic him, and the hairstyle, the glasses, the mannerisms. I thought it was just so endearing and so perfect.
Yeah, yeah. She was spot on. I felt the other characters were... Paul Rudd was fantastic, like he is in everything. You can't go wrong.
Yeah.
The only character I'll say that I didn't like was the mom, which Carrie Coon. I thought she was underdeveloped. I think she was underwritten. I think... There wasn't much likable about her.
Yeah.
I just didn't really like her. Like, the kids were great. Everybody was great. But she was even somewhat mean to her kids in some ways.
You know, and then the whole, like, drinking thing, because they bring it up several times through the movie. Like, she's just kind of down on her luck, and she didn't appear to be a drunk. I mean, it wasn't, you know.
Yeah.
But that kind of came up, and I didn't really understand that aspect of it.
Yeah, I guess that she's... the way that it's played out is that Egon left when she was born, and so she's never met her dad. So she's always had that chip on her shoulder and hated her dad and blah, blah, blah. And the premise of the story is they are down on their luck. She's a single mom. She has two kids. The other kid is the older brother, Trevor, who's played by the kid from Stranger Things. And they don't have any money. But at the same time, Egon passes away and they inherit what he had, which was just a crappy old farmhouse in the middle of Oklahoma. So they go out there because they get kicked out of their apartment, so they're going to move into this house, and which the kids, of course, you know, aren't cool with and whatever.
To me, that storyline has been repeated and repeated, and, you know, you walk into an old creepy house and the kids go one way and they discover a whole... I mean, I've seen it so many times, and maybe it was having the child in it from Stranger Things. It just felt like Stranger Things.
Yeah, it truly did.
That piece of it, really, I felt like I had seen it 100 times.
Well, like, what did you say before we started filming about the single mom?
Yeah, the whole single mom thing, you know, kind of escaping from the city to the farmhouse, it's just getting kind of old. Yeah. Like, is that the new mom? I don't know.
There's no dad in the picture anymore.
No dad, and the mom is disconnected and drinking a couple glasses of wine and passed out at one point on the table. And I was just like, huh.
Yeah.
I don't know a lot of moms like that, I guess.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Yeah. Or I just keep seeing them repeated over and over, and I'm just getting kind of tired of it.
Yeah, for some reason, that's just the trope right now. Mm-hmm. And that's what... So anyway, but it was other. You just let go of that and you roll on with it, and it was really good. You know,
I thought so.
Paul Rudd really kept things going humor wise.
Yes.
All the effects were cool. It's a lot of familiar stuff that if you've seen the other movies, in particular, really just the first one. I don't think it even tied into the second one much.
No.
But I think that it really gives you a sense of jumping right back in where they left off. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be 30 years later or 40 years later at this point. So, I thought it was great. It's worth watching. It's 100%. I'd give it an A for sure.
I would as well. And you know what I liked is I like the adventures that the kids have. They're in a small town and they're out, you know, driving around in cars and doing the stuff that we did in our small town.
Yeah.
They've taken them out of the city. They took away the cell phones and they're just out exploring.
I feel like, well, this movie's been in development for years and years and years. It was even, at one point, Bill Murray wouldn't do it because Harold Ramis and him were in a fight. Who was the guy that passed away.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, Harold Ramis directed the movie Groundhog Day, which Bill Murray, of course, starred in. And they got in a fight during it. And so they haven't spoken to each other for 20 years.
That long ago? Mm-hmm.
And so Bill Murray wouldn't be in a Ghostbusters sequel. That's why there hasn't been a Ghostbusters sequel. So they ended up making up when Harold Ramis was dying. Mm-hmm. And so then they did this movie. And since then, so it's been in development forever.
Yeah.
But I personally feel like the taking an adult situation and giving it to a bunch of kids has been overdone since, like, the Goonies was original. Everything else is like, come on. You know, so even Stranger Things. I love me some Stranger Things.
Oh, Stranger Things. But it's enough to go,
really? You've got these two little kids and they're raiding a Russian base that happens to be underneath a mall.
Yes.
You know, in Indiana. And so it's like, come on, man. There's some of that gets to the point where it's like, what's wrong with having adults be adults and kids be kids, you know? But then, kid, when you are a kid, it's more exciting to see yourself represented.
Yes.
And I get to be a Ghostbuster.
Yes.
So I thought they did a really good job of that. Yeah. They let the kids, especially the little podcast kid.
Oh, he was great.
He was cute. He was funny.
He was really good. I laughed at his character so many times. I really like that. And I like the rapport that he had with the little girl. And I thought that he was just wonderful.
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
So before spoilers, we'll jump into that. But I would just say I'd give it an A. I thought that it was really well done. The nostalgia was perfect and on point. It wasn't too much. It was just right. A couple lines might have been forced, but you had to. You know, like the cop when he said, who are you going to call? You know, it's like, come on. But at the same time, we were all waiting for it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, are you a god? There's that line. You know, and all those ones from the, you know, original movie. So if I had to give it mine, like I said, it'd be an A. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Go check it out.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Oh, I will watch this again.
Yeah.
But I'll start over and I'll watch it.
Watch the other ones.
Yeah, I'll watch it as 1, 2, 3.
Well, they left a pretty good opening for it to be a sequel.
There will be.
Yeah. So there'll be more. That'll be that. Yeah. So from here on out, we were treading water in spoiler territory. So now we're going to just say what actually happened. So tune out if you have not seen it yet and you do not want this ruined for you. So spoilers ahead. Here we go.
Spoiler.
Make sure everybody knows that. So I have to say my favorite part is when the actual original Ghostbusters that are still alive, Ernie Hudson, Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, show up. And it's only for a little bit at the end.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a whole time. But to me, that's when it felt like Ghostbusters again. And I was telling you this when we were watching it.
Yes.
The whole movie's funny. Paul Rudd is always funny. Mm-hmm. You know, everything about it was great. The ghost humor was cute. The little kids were cute, all that.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't feel like I was watching Ghostbusters again until then, but not because the actors, because of the humor. It changed the second Bill Murray, Dan Aykroyd, and Ernie Hudson got on set.
Oh, well, you put the three of them together, and there is no...
That's what made it magic in the first place.
It made it perfect. Yeah.
It was missing Harold Ramis, and it wasn't because he's there.
Yes.
For those of you now that are there, if you've seen it or you haven't, but you don't care, he is a ghost in it, and he is represented throughout the whole movie just as an invisible force that's helping the little girl. But then in the end, he actually appears, and they do a CGI, and it was really good.
It was really good. I had tears in my eyes.
Yeah.
I had tears in my eyes, but when Dan Aykroyd's character picked up the phone... earlier on in the movie, the minute I heard his voice, the nostalgia just flooded me. The voice and the, I loved
that. That's what made it magic. Mm-hmm. I would have preferred to see more of the original Ghostbusters myself, but I'm 39, so of course I would. But, you know, because that's what I grew up with.
Yeah.
But it was great. But, like, I just thought it was super random that the humor just changed right then. Because even though most of Bill Murray's jokes in every movie he's ever been in are improv'd.
Yes.
There's a director behind that scene saying, okay, I want you to go this way with it. I want you to go this way. Mm-hmm. He didn't include any kind of humor like that through any of it. And then at that point, it's almost like he just said, okay, do what you guys do. And it just changed. And to me, that I laughed the most at that point. It was so funny.
And before we got to that point, the movie had gone on and gone on. And I'm like, oh no, we're not going to see them. They're not going to be here. And then all of a sudden, there they are. And I was like, that made the ending for me.
Totally. Absolutely. Yeah. And then the ending, of course, is, you know, Winston wound up getting rich by starting a company. And so he took care of the firehouse. He took back Ecto-1 and has a big company. And I assume he's paying for the kids to live now because it's Egon's family and stuff.
Yes.
And so, but then the very ending in scene is you've got, they look in the basement and there's the containment unit, the big red safe, and it's blinking red. So that means the power is about to go out on that, because that's what happened in the first one.
Oh, okay.
And so they have to change it. And so that means all those ghosts are going to get loose, which will be Slimer, which is what we missed.
I just didn't like Muncher. So Muncher's what, Slimer's ugly cousin? What the heck was that thing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I'm waiting for Slimer to turn around, and it wasn't Slimer. Yeah. It was some other ghost that resembles him slightly.
The ghost in the trailer that we all thought was Slimer that just looked different is not Slimer.
Ugh.
His name's Muncher, and he eats metal.
How could they do that?
Yeah, yeah. How could you not have Slimer?
I know.
We even talked about this in our pre thing. There's going to be Slimer
That's who I was going for.
But there wasn't Slimer. They didn't even allude to Slimer.
No.
I mean, I guess the only allusion was that there's a Muncher instead of a Slimer.
Well, and they were following his trail. They totally tricked me. They were following a trail of slime to Muncher. What?
Yeah, and he wasn't fun. He wasn't, it wasn't Slimer.
No.
Whatever. You know, it is, I guess they just wanted to go a different way. I guarantee you, with him being in New York, Slimer will be back in that one. Because I think Slimer's in the containment unit.
He's in there. Oh, so that would make sense.
Yeah, I need to watch the other ones again. So here's my big question. So in the end, Egon comes back and helps the little girl hold the proton pack while they're shooting Gozer the Gozerian, which, as you recall from the original, was the lady with the big red eyes and the flat top haircut covered in salt or whatever, as she has the two dogs. So she's there again, and of course she asks the classic line, "Are you a god?" And then Ray sits there for a second and thinks, and they're like, "Really, Ray?" Again. So that was really funny.
That was good.
Yeah.
Well, that's when our movie made a shift, and it shifted from the younger people in the audience to the older people in the audience.
Yeah. That's clearly what they were doing. They're trying to get a new generation with these kids.
Yes, and bring us along with it.
So my question is, Harold Ramis is standing there, it's a CG of him, but it's, you know, Egon, he's helping her, and then he has his moment where he hugs his daughter and grandkids, and then he gets to see the guys again, and they all kind of say sorry for not believing you, and they all disbanded in the late 80s because he thought that an apocalypse was coming and they didn't believe him, so he ended up stealing all the proton packs and stuff and leaving to go stop that. So that's why he left his family, was because he was protecting this, like I said earlier, Hellmouth. And so if he wasn't there watching that, being vigilant, and stopping things from coming through, the whole world was going to be destroyed. So that's why he had to leave his kid.
And he was right. And no one, as you said, no one believed him.
So in the end, and he was right. So they apologized and stuff. Well, anyway, here's my question. I'm rambling on. So my question is, they have the big trap that is made in the dirt field. And all the ghosts that get released, which there's a bunch of them, just like at the end of Ghostbusters 2, they all get sucked into the trap, and then they're trapped, and we're good, and yay, the apocalypse is averted. Why didn't Egon, as a ghost, get sucked into that trap like every other ghost in the whole area?
Well, I think that they're mischievous ghosts, and they're kind of bad, and they're not supposed to be here, and I think he's more of like a spirit, like an angel.
Like an angel?
Because he kind of zoomed up and gone like a shooting star.
For the story-wise, it makes sense because you need to have that ending, that goodbye.
You couldn't suck him in with the other ghosts.
But like, logically, that was my worry. If anybody has any good ideas on that, please comment on the comments below, or go to our Instagram page or our .com or anything and tell me what you think, because I am very interested to why that is. Was it a mistake on that filmmaker's part? I don't think so, because it was very well thought out everywhere else. So what was the reason behind that?
They should have like looked at him and given him a head start.
Yeah.
Been like, okay, you get out of here. We're going to suck all these guys into the, you know.
Something like that. Or was it because he was holding the proton pack?
I think he's an angel.
Yeah, or he was attached to the little girl.
Yes.
Or he could have been an angel because he was a different color. The other ones all have that. Yeah, he was more.
And as you mentioned earlier.
He looked more like a force ghost in Star Wars.
He was a force earlier, and that's what you had called him. And we didn't get to see him till the end. And
right.
Then he got to hug his daughter. I mean, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, it was super good. It was really good. Yeah. So, and the way they ended it was cool, and that was that. So, that was it. The other thing is I found a loophole in listening to it, and I think this might be. It wasn't explained. So one of them was when the little girl calls Ray at the hotline and he's like, we're closed or whatever. And he's talking. He's telling her about what happened with Egon and everything. He says that the firehouse is now a Starbucks.
I saw that,
but at the very end and the post-credit scene, which you haven't seen this yet and you're just listening to me, there are two post-credit scenes. All the way at the very end of the credits is the important one. And that one is Winston talking to Janine. And it goes back to a scene that was in Ghostbusters 2, I believe, where she gives a lucky coin to Egon and hugs him. And then later, and it shows her playing with that coin. So I'm thinking Janine had a relationship with Egon for sure. But Janine might be that girl's mother, the mom in this.
I
think that she might have been adopted and sent off.
Yes. Instead of, yeah, they're trying to make some connections there.
Yeah, because she even said, I was your dad's... friend, you know, she said it like that.
She did.
So I was thinking that, but anyway,
but it was still a firehouse. It's not a Starbucks.
Yeah, it was a firehouse. Winston either had it, owned it all these years, or bought it back, but it was just covered in, I'm guessing he owned it because it was dusty and spiderwebby and
it looked pretty run down. And
so, and then they bring Ecto-1 back in and he's gonna fix it up and he's gonna, so that's interesting. I don't know why they did that. And it had to be done on purpose because when you edit the film, you can go, oh, wait, we just said it was a Starbucks. So, but they didn't really give an explanation.
They didn't. Maybe he was just telling fibs to lead the girl off his track.
Yeah. But anyway, we're about out of time. So this was great and wonderful time. Go check it out. It's playing at the Bishop Twin Theater. We saw it at the Minaret Theaters. The D Place is the for entertainment.
Yes.
And it was fantastic. The new seats in there are awesome. We had a great time, and thank you guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Amy. That was fun. So again, comment with your input on the movie, or if you have an answer to my question, or if you want to see us review something else, then tell us, give us your idea of what that is. I'm rambling on, so we're going to shut up. Just remember, I ain't afraid of no ghosts. Have a good one.